Blog Talk Radio. Josh Koscheck, 34 years old, born in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, fighting out of Fresno, California, and representing Deep Throne Base Camp Fresno. I chose an academic scholarship at Edinburgh University and a wrestling scholarship, so I had a full ride there. I left AK in San Jose for one reason only, Javier Mendez. He only cares about, certain people in the gym. After you lose, he'll throw your name under the bus and say, he didn't listen to the game plan when realistically Javier never given me a game plan in my entire life. And it's happened not only to me, but Cain Velasquez, other fighters, over there in the San Jose gym. So I'm in a better place now. I have two great gyms that are very successful. And needless to say that my gym's doing better than his. So it was a good decision, business-wise. I don't think there will be a reunion of me and Javier ever. Once somebody crosses me, they're done. They're dead to me. My hobbies are, flying a plane, riding dirt bikes, fly fishing. I get booed every time. They talk trash on me on my Twitter and, Facebook and all that crap. But when they see me in public, I'm like, oh, weren't you guys just the ones booing me a minute ago? Now you want my picture? I'm like, f*** you, I'm a fighter. When I'm in the ring, it's f***ing business, It's my livelihood on the line, so I'm going to be pissed. I don't feel there's an etiquette, I wouldn't follow it if there was an etiquette in this sport. I don't like anybody I'm going to fight. Nobody. Don't respect them. Don't care about them. Don't want anything to know about, do anything with them. It's like, hey, this is a fight. I'm going to kick your ass. You're going to kick my ass, The primary thing I get out of this sport is, the fact that, there was really nowhere to go for wrestlers, and there's no money training for the Olympics. So it gives wrestlers, like Daniel Cormier, Cain Velasquez, John Fitch, Josh Koscheck, and the list goes on and on, opportunity to make a living and do something that's similar to what you've done your whole life. Ultimately, it's about winning, and it's about money.
They're talking in a little preview piece for something called Nuvo TV, a show called Fight Factory on Nuvo TV. So just thought I'd throw that clip in there. It was kind of controversial, a little bit edgy to start the show there.
Nothing like this controversy. I'm a fan of controversy.
Right. And we're still waiting on Tom. I don't see his number coming up. I know that we had a little hitch. We had to start late because we had no scheduled show on the switchboard here on Blog Talk Radio. They failed us. I don't know what the hell happened over there, but somehow they eliminated a regularly scheduled show, so I had to go in and create a new one. So maybe we'll have Tom on later.
Yeah, it's still able to.
But for now, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, I ain't going nowhere. It's your number one guy.
And tonight we have a pretty good guest, Abel Perry, is coming on at the 9:15 slot. And here's Tom. Can you hear me?
I'm here.
No. There he is.
I can hear you.
All right. So, we got a big show. We got boxer Abel Perry coming on. He is a little bit frustrated these days because he can't seem to get a match that sticks. I think we must have had him on at a previous time because when I punched in his number to the Skype database here, it said this number is already added. So, I don't know how long ago we had him on, but... I definitely talked to him before. I called him up, at least. So I guess this is a rematch here for us. But
it would have been a while because I remember most of our guests, to be honest. I don't remember talking to him. I have his record pulled up right now. I'm seeing some familiar names on there. Guys that I've seen in the past. Trying to see if he's fought anywhere close. He's been fighting a lot, mostly on the West Coast. Looks like he fought James De La Rocha, lost that bout. That was his first loss. He was a member of the first season of the Contender, I believe. Donald Camarena was a fighter. I know he fought Paulie Malignaggi. was looking on, you know, had a loss to Grady Brewer, who, I believe Grady Brewer, did he win the one-year contender? And then Bartiz Logan, a tough fighter, has, you know, a sub-500 record, but he's a lot better than his record indicates. I've seen him fight. So, you know, got some fighters on here. He's fought mostly out Midwest, Oklahoma, Colorado, Texas, Washington. But I know from the article you sent me earlier today, he was supposed to fight my namesake, the Tijuana Tornado, Antonio Margarito. And Margarito decided to retire, which I can't honestly say that I disagree with. So, yeah, I can see where his frustration comes in, because, you know, even though Margarito is, you know, well past his prime and he's taken some beatings in his last few fights, it would still represent a nice payday. And anytime
right.
you lose out on a nice payday like that, especially if you've worked and, you know, you tried to reach your goal, it can definitely be a little annoying.
Yeah, I guess his latest backup was Tony Harrison. He was supposed to fight him on August 25th in Michigan. And I guess Perry's manager was given an opportunity to face unbeaten Alex Perez in New York City, and they turned that fight down because they had already agreed to fight Harrison, and then Harrison backed out. Harrison is 9-0-2, so he's undefeated, and just didn't follow through there and hook him up with the opportunity to fight. So it's unfortunate. He's had a tough. To keep an opponent listed on his you know, upcoming bout sheet. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll see who out there he wants to fight, whether this Perez fight is still going to be available for him maybe next. And we'll go from there. Definitely sounds like a good record, though, at 18-5 with 9 knockouts. Go ahead, Tony.
You can see where the guy's getting frustrated because, you know, a lot of times, I mean, these guys, it's not like you're an NFL football player and, you know, you're a backup quarterback, and whether you play this week or not, you're still going to get a paycheck. This is a fun game where, you know, if you stop fighting, you're not making money. So, especially if you're looking at a big fight with a guy like a Margarito, you know, you're looking at a chance to, you know, make a nice chunk of change. And then to get that point away from you at the last minute, you're going from making a nice payday to make it no payday, yeah, that's going to be a little frustrating.
Yeah, to say the least, I guess.
A little bit, you know?
We'll talk to him about that a little bit later. We got, of course, UFC news to talk about. Fox 4 happened last Saturday. It was all knockouts. Well, not all knockouts, but all stoppages in the main card. And I thought it was actually one of the best main free cards on TV in a long time, but apparently the fan base did not tune in to the point where they got one of the, actually the lowest rating for any MMA event in the history of the ratings on regular television, I guess.
How do you explain that? How in the world do you explain that?
I guess because there wasn't really any huge names in the main event, maybe, and there were no championship fights. Maybe it was bad timing. I don't know what else was on Saturday night at that time.
Unless everyone was still so upset from what happened a few weeks ago that their memories were a little too long, maybe, you know. But, yeah, I just, that was the kind of card that I felt bad that anyone had to lose. I think that all 8 of those guys gave everything they had, and we got our money's worth.
Alrighty, so we had a little technical difficulties, which you are very familiar with here, on the Fighters Unlimited Combat Sports Show. If it wasn't for technical difficulties, we wouldn't have any at all. But looks like we have a solid connection now. We're back. Just going to have to wait for Tom to check back in. We do have the show from 8:30 to 10:30 tonight, so...
While we're doing that, you sent me an email earlier, and the one that I sent you about the Marciano recession unveiling. I know it is scheduled for the weekend of the 22nd, 23rd. I think they're actually doing it on the 23rd. I was looking at some reports today on Google, which were bringing up local Massachusetts newspapers. But before I contacted Dennis, that's why I wanted to get to you first, just figuring, you know, there was some tension within the Marciano family.
Right. Well, on that note, I haven't checked into it yet, but I do have email addresses for the people that are actually part of the whole process in town. I think one of the guys is like a city council guy, so I'll email him and let him know. I got a guy coming all the way from Philly for this. I need to know. Is it a go?
Yeah. Oh. Well, you can also let him know that Dennis did invite me about a year or so ago before the whole little family issues.
Right.
So, you know, I want the first class treatment from the family. I was invited by somebody from the family.
All right.
but, you know, I was talking to my dad about it, and he's actually really happy. You know, he and I talked about it for months, about going up. And we have a woman friend of the family. She comes over and trains sometimes. She's big into, like, you know, doing fundraisers and stuff like that. But she likes people to come and do all the work, do all the cooking, do all this, do all that. Last year, the weekend they did it was the weekend I was in the ER. So it's like, you know, I got dropped off at the ER. My dad would go to this function, and they had to come back and pick me up when I was getting discharged. So he really doesn't want to go to it. And this year, I'm like, we get the invitation. I'm like, yeah, that's the weekend of the Marciano thing. He's like, thank you, Rocky. 40 years after your death, and you're still coming through to the Penny Cow family.
Yeah. Well, the last I heard on that whole front was Jose Suleiman from the WBC actually came to town and made a visit. So I'm pretty sure that that means they're going full steam ahead and everything should be on track. So, but
yeah, from everything I looked at today, it looked like, you know, like I said, I just pulled up Google and I pulled up some, you know, reports just to see what they said. And, yeah, I mean, they showed, like, not, I guess, official pictures, but, you know, design photos of it. They showed where it was going to be presented at, and I guess they have to dig out part of the ground, like 13 feet by, you know, whatever, and they actually showed the picture of the ground where it's going to be being, you know, guy even watched the video being prepared. I'll have to send it to you. It was a personal site.
I'll try to make it down there for that. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be pretty cool, you know. And I mean this is something I think is, you know, is pretty awesome. And the fact that a couple of years ago I'm buying a T-shirt, and I ended up, that's when I first met Dennis during that game up at Fenway. And now it's like, you know, we were talking. That's how I found out about the statue dedication. And you know, obviously, you were doing some work for the website.
I'm still actually in touch with the guy over in England. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, but his name is John Cameron. And he's writing a huge, you know, tell-all book about Marciano. And actually, he talks more to the son than anybody now, I guess. Is my life.
Rocky Kevin?
Yeah. So... Yeah, that's September 23rd, 22nd and 23rd is the...
Yeah, and I think the actual dedication is going to be on the 23rd, which will be the 60th anniversary of Rocky knocking out Jersey Joe to win the heavyweight title. And I guess it would be kind of fitting for me to be there, first of all, because my uncle was at that fight, and second of all, the title-winning fight was in Philadelphia.
There you go. Well, it should be a good show. Getting back to what we were talking about before we broke up with Tom on the everybody.
And actually, one more thing to add, Rich. When I was looking up some articles today, Jimmy Birchfield, the promoter for CES Boxing, was also looking at putting on a boxing card that weekend.
That would be cool.
Yeah, in Brockton.
Yeah.
And they want to make sure they have at least a heavyweight fight as the main event on there.
Well, I'll give my suggestion a little later on that front. But anyway, we got UFC on Fox 4 to talk about. I cut you right off in the middle of a sentence there when we went into frozen zone there for a while, Tom. What were you going to say?
Well, I just think that was the kind of card. You know, sometimes you see these fights where you hate to see a loser. I mean, I felt that all eight guys just gave it their all. And we definitely got our money's worth. So where do we begin?
Well, I guess we could start with the main event. It was one of the better wars I've witnessed in a while. I mean, that's why I kind of say the whole card was really the best one on free TV that we've seen in a while. But Mauricio Shogun Hua and Brandon Vera, none of which have, you know, really dazzled anybody recently. I mean, Hua got really beaten badly by John Jones in the middle of his rise to power there. But Vera just fought the fight of his life to at least be exciting and just hung in there for as long as possible against everything that Hua threw at him. And then that last couple uppercuts that really stunned him was the beginning of the end. And, man, four rounds, almost four full rounds of just back and forth slugging. And, you know, if you're not watching a title fight, that's really the minimum that you want, or the maximum that you can get out of just a regular, you know, I guess a contender fight, because it's for the title shot. But I guess Hua just wasn't exciting enough for Dana White, because he chose Lyoto Machida over Ryan Bader, which was a kind of a delaying of the inevitable there, just because of their two styles. Bader is more like a straight-up boxer, coming in there with the chin tucked and hands up, and just didn't work out for him because he couldn't find his range, and then when he tried to rush in, he just ran straight into Machida's fist.
Yeah, that was a classic KO, and you know, it just seemed like he was, as hard as he was trying, he just didn't have the movement, he didn't have the speed. And I'm not saying Machida's an easy puzzle to figure out, but I just think his style was made for Machida. So I don't know where he goes from here. I mean, I'm a fan of the guy, but that has to be a devastating knockout. But as far as Hua, he looked pretty tired early on in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, it just seemed like it was almost in slow motion here, that I'm thinking by the second round, I'm thinking, my God, you know, hey, buddy, we got three more to go here, you know. But, I mean, I think that's probably what Dana made the decision by. And furthermore, if you look at how both guys did against Jones the first time around, Machida was one of the few times Jones had ever lost a round in that first round. So I guess the open-ended question is now, can Machida make the changes to have a different outcome next time?
You know, have to go see Steven Seagal.
Yeah. You know, because that's what
the trick kicks.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite phrases is, you know, the guy that came up short the first time maybe is not necessarily at a disadvantage the second time around because he can make the adjustments, but John Jones is on another level. So
Dan Henderson is probably the best matchup.
That's true too. Now, I think that maybe we're all jumping the gun on this because that fight's far from a guarantee for Jones too. I mean, of course he's the favorite, but I guess let's just sit back now and see what happens there. And then the other two fights I found pretty interesting also.
Yeah, actually, watch from Nam Phan and Cole Miller on, and Nam Phan got the last decision of the night in the final preview fight there over Cole Miller, and it's just that was really excellent boxing on his part. He's a real specialist with the left hook to the body and then left hook to the head, and he has pretty much one of the best jabs in all of MMA. And he's just a little heavier on the left than anything else, and his all-around game is kind of lacking. But he's always, you know, very tough, very close in his fights. He always comes to fight, and I think regardless of whether he ever is in contention for a title, he'll be around for a long time just because he delivers, you know. He has a lot of heart, and people seem to like that. Cole Miller's been around forever. He's one of those guys that is always somewhere on, you know, these different cards, and he might not always be a main event, but you know, he shows up a lot and fights a lot for the UFC, and it's a pretty big name for Nam Phan to beat, and it's definitely probably earned him a few more fans being the final fight before the main event. But Mike Swick beating DeMarcus Johnson, got to get the knockout of the night. Because it was the only knockout on the main event card, anyway, main card. But DeMarcus Johnson is really kicking his ass in the first round.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of rust on Swick, and I thought he was really going to have to turn it up. I mean, after that first round, I don't think there was any question about who won that one. But got to give Swick a lot of credit. He still has his power.
Yeah, nice big old right hand started it for him, and just man, it was a quick knockout. It just came out of nowhere. But I think Joe Lozon earned his fight of the night bonus and submission of the night bonus with his win over Jamie Varner. Varner, talk about boxing. He had tremendous boxing. Is he another Lock Haven guy?
He was a national champion for Lock Haven. I really didn't know him there. He was there after I left. But yeah, he's another Lock Haven guy. He was a national champion there.
Wow, I didn't know that. So,
yeah.
Got Tim Boach, who's a wrestler from Lock Haven, right? And Jamie Varner, two guys.
Yeah, I know Mike Cisnolevich is a wrestler from Lock Haven, because I knew Mike personally, because he came out for both the boxing team and the wrestling team, and I recruited him for the boxing team because I was getting ready to, you know, I was more coaching at the time since my eligibility was up. And I recruited Mike, and then he was doing so good as a wrestler, he knew he had a chance at a scholarship or, you know, a chance to, you know, at least get some of the tuition paid, with boxing, of course, being just a club sport. So he went with the wrestling and did very well with it.
Well, Varner pretty much was winning all the rounds with just technical boxing, and Lozon was just constantly on the defensive, just trying to find an opening. I mean, usually though, when he did find an opening, he landed his shots, but Varner just smothered him with boxing for most of the fight. He actually broke his right hand, I think. I don't know if it's just right, but he broke one of his hands. And then Joe Lozon rolled to the ground with him, and while they were tumbling over, he slipped his legs around an arm and the head, and got the triangle choke. And that's just who he is. I mean, he actually predicted that, too, because he said he was going to put his hands on Varner and then he's going to choke him out. So,
you know, I really like Varner's work to the body in that, too, the body shots.
Yeah.
They're so underused in MMA. You know, these guys could sure learn a lot from boxing there. And I thought Varner was doing great, but I also think that Rogan hit the nail on the head when he said he's in good shape, but not really fight shape, and there is a difference. And maybe that's what it came down to.
Yeah, I just heard a lot about Varner over the years, but I'd never seen him fight until then. And I was really impressed with how technical his boxing was, and just the tight defense, too. I mean, Lozon really didn't have any opportunity to come in and use his own offense on him, because he just kept the fight on the feet for most of the time and just used his personal advantage to to, you know, kind of own the cage for the
Well, I remember when when Varner won the WEC lightweight title from Razor Rob McCullough. McCullough's a world-class Muay Thai fighter. In fact, I have his DVD instructionals on Muay Thai, and Rob was, and he picked up his ground game a bit too. But Varner just did quite well against him on his feet, knocked him out if I remember right. So, and now I don't know what had happened to Varner the past couple of years. It seems like he sort of fell off the radar screen, but I think he has nothing to be ashamed of after Saturday, so I think he's back. So look forward to seeing more of him.
Yeah, definitely. But I think we're a little overdue for Abel Perry here. We got to get him in the ring. We'll chat about the UFC one card a little bit later with the rematch of Frankie Edgar and Benson Henderson. I did hear today that Dana White said there's going to be no rematch if Frankie Edgar wins this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, why would you say that? Like, you're expecting the guy to win or something? But Edgar was able to get the rematch, and now they're saying Henderson wouldn't get the same opportunity if he loses this fight. You know, you always want to see a three-peat if a fight goes like that, back and forth. I mean, Edgar got
sure.
Maynard, so why not? But apparently Dana White says no. Just what Dana White does, I guess.
Huh.
Anyway. All right. Guess we're reconnected now. So we're going to try to get Abel Perry on the line. For some reason, he's not coming up now. On the list. What's going on here? All right, so I'm back. Everybody's back. If I could just find Abel Perry in the system, be all right.
All right.
I know I am. All right, well, I guess I'm just going to have to do it again. Skype is dysfunctional tonight. Keeps kicking me off. While we're waiting for this, might as well talk at least about the main event of 150. I really think Benson Henderson just did such a great job in the first fight. I don't see where Edgar could. What about you, Tom? Can you hear me, Tom?
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Okay. I would concur with that. I think that, you know, Edgar's going to have a few tricks up his sleeve, and he's been pretty good in rematches so far, but I just think this is one of those styles make fights scenarios, and I don't see him pulling it off.
know, I just really, I kind of wonder why Edgar would be so adamant that he doesn't want to go down and wait, seeing as he walks around at his fighting weight right now, pretty much. But he doesn't want to drop 10 pounds and get out and fight later, guys, and see what happens. He'd rather make this fight.
Yeah, and
more anticipating Sergio Pettis in the rematch, but to give it to Edgar.
Yeah, and this is going to be tough because Benson just has such an incredible strength advantage, and I think that has to play into the mental game after a while. And that's, as I was talking to Gray Maynard, I think that's why I'd like to see that matchup, and I think he'd have a little more trouble throwing Gray around than he will with Frankie. So we'll see what happens Saturday. And your comments on the undercard.
Trying to get it to come up right now. We got, I know I can see one fight here, Jake Shields versus Ed Herman. That's kind of interesting. Shields is a import from Strikeforce, and didn't do as well as a lot of people thought he would against GSP there. Where GSP showed how boxing can really make or break you in a fight. Mm-hmm. Made him in that fight for sure. He's been working with Freddie Roach, so he's like one of the guys that really takes his boxing seriously. He's fighting Ed Herman, a guy who's been kind of back and forth. He's up at one time, looks great, and then he's down the next. So he's got a pretty similar record. Shields has 7 more wins. His record's 27-6-1. Ed Herman is 20 wins, 8 losses. So definitely could be interesting. Will it be interesting? I don't know. And we got... go ahead.
Yeah, I think that Shields is just, and I know he works hard on the stand-up game, but I've just never seen him be that effective. So I think that the strategy for him is going to have to be to take it down. And when he does, I wouldn't count out Herman's submission game because he's one of, I don't know how many by submission. I don't know if you're on the computer, you'll know there, but his submission game's nothing to underestimate, but I think if I'm in Herman's corner, let's keep this thing standing and knock him out. So it's an intriguing matchup, and Shields, and then if you'll remember, his first comeback fight after St. Pierre when he was knocked out by Jake Ellenberger, which it never happened. I don't think he'd ever been stopped before. So he was blaming this on the weight loss, and he just said by the last 2 weeks of training, he wasn't even focused on training. It was just losing weight. So now he's back up in his natural division. So we've got a million questions here. I'm anxious to see it.
Right.
And then your thoughts on Cowboy and Melvin.
Yeah, that's a good fight for Guillard. He had a particularly rough knockout against Joe Lazon, who's on the card last weekend. And Cerrone's... definitely due for a big fight, so I think this should be a pretty interesting contest. Cerrone comes in at 18-4. Gallard has 30 win losses and 2 draws, so he's been around forever, and you can never count him out. But like with the Lazon fight, if you don't get him out quickly, you're probably not going to be able to do a decision with him. Cerrone's got some power in his hands. I think Guillard will win it if it goes to decision. But if Cerrone's going to win it, I think he could win it in the first round. It's just a matter of, you know, which guy shows up to fight.
Yeah, I think...
He's only got 4 losses. Guillard's lost 10
yeah.
times. So.
And I think Cerrone has a few more tools in the toolbox. The problem may be, you know, they're fighting in Cerrone's home area. I guess he's a Colorado boy. And sometimes, and as you guys know, sometimes you don't really have the home court advantage in boxing or MMA because if you get caught up in the crowd and are just so focused on being entertaining, sometimes that can not end too good. So, I think Cowboy has that kind of personality that he's just going to want to stand and trade, and you know, he has a pretty good chin, but I would tell him, why give Melvin his best or possibly only chance to win the fight? I mean, and, but there's one part of me that hopes he does. It'll be very entertaining from a fan standpoint. So I'm looking forward to it. And I'm not counting Melvin out. I mean, my money would be on Cowboy, but Melvin's got that power. I think at that weight division, he can take anyone out if he hits him right.
Right. Well, we're going to try to get Abel Perry now. And X. Hitting the button. Nothing's happening here. Oh, Lord. It's standing. I mean, he's got the better knees, kicks, and stuff. So, I think Cerrone is... more like a 1-2 puncher, and I think that that dynamic, if it stays on the feet, just goes to Gihard's favor.
Sometimes we have trouble, sometimes we don't.
This is mainly a Skype problem these days, though, I think. Ever since I added Facebook to Skype, it just constantly goes in and out. I wish there's a way to reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Hopefully this works this time. I know Abel's number is in here. His mic is on.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. I didn't hear you.
Okay, we can all hear each other. I don't hear the Able phone ringing. Trying looks like
Hello.
Hello, Abel.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
Good, good, good.
We're also on the line with Tony the Tornado and Psychic Tom.
Good evening, Abel.
Hey,
I'm going to head outside for a second, guys, so I can hear you a little better. Hold on 1 second.
Sure. Yeah, we're a little late. We apologize for that. We've had some...
Oh, you're good, Nick. You're good.
So tell us what's going on. You had a couple fights canceled now, and sounds like you had a good opportunity to fight an undefeated guy. Is that still on the table, or?
Not that I know of. Either. He, from what I gather, didn't look really good in his last fight. And kind of before they had actually had that fight, they had lined things up to have his next fight with me. And, you know, I don't have a killer record or anything like that. You know, my career started slow. But I think that it just boiled down to the simple fact of the matter is I'm a little bit of a winning streak. And... you know, he's not the best guy that I will have fought, but, you know, if the fight went through, I would have been the best guy that he fought to date. And they weren't comfortable with that. And, of course, that's speculation, but that's my take on it.
We're taking a look at your record. I'm looking at it right now. It looks like you're undefeated over your last 5 fights, 4 of them by knockout. And look at some of the guys you had lost to were some, you know, highly rated fighters. Like Grady Brooker in there. He was on the same contender. I believe he had won it the second year. Albeit Donald
right.
Cameron, he had fought Paulie Malignaggi, James De La Rosa. He was the brother of the Juan De La Rosa from the first year of the contender, if I'm not mistaken. So it looks I mean, you've had some bumps early in your career, but you've been fighting quality guys. Even the guy like Joe Gomez, 14-1. And sometimes, you know, even though you don't win some of the fights, you gain valuable experience. Reminds me of a guy named Freddie Pendleton, who was 15-15, and he went on and knocked Roger Mayweather out on ESPN and propelled that into a title fight. It was the gentleman you were going to fight. He was by the name of Tony Harrison, correct?
Say again, I'm sorry?
The guy they were talking about you fighting, the undefeated fighter, was that Tony Harrison?
Yeah, that was Tony Harrison. He's a current guy with Emmanuel Stewart.
From Detroit. I was looking at his record, and here's what kind of disturbed me a little bit looking at him. Because he's been fighting most of his career in Michigan. Had a few fights in Germany, actually. Now, his way of fighting, he fights a guy by the name of Calvin Odom, wins a unanimous decision on all 3 cards. He won, 2 of the cards he won a shutout, 8-0. The other card he won 7-1. And he beat Odom. Now, I'm looking at Odom's record here, who has not won a fight in 6 years. He was...
Yeah, sorry about that.
No worries.
That was the Skype phone. We got a house call, and it's on Magic Jack with the house phone. So
I get it. Yeah.
But Tony was in the middle of talking about somebody, and you guys started phasing out.
I'm not sure where exactly you were.
Tony, do you remember? Tony, are you there? Where's Tony? Tony, can you hear me? Try Tony back again. Good time. Anyway, while we're waiting, how'd you first get into boxing anyway?
Oh, man, I got into boxing.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, we're all here.
Okay. Yeah, I got into boxing actually in Alaska. You know, they didn't have, I was raised my whole life in Alaska pretty much, and they didn't have a big USA boxing circuit in Alaska. But they did have kind of a club boxing. It was kind of a tough man scene, a tough man boxing circuit that they did every Thursday night, almost year round. And so I was able to get a lot of fights quick. You know what I mean? The local bum would fight, but the local bum, you know, had 50 or 60 fights. You know, there'd be some pros kind of at the end of their career who would come up and, you know, hang around that circuit from time to time because there was no commission. There's no boxing commission in Alaska. So it was good. I had 90 fights in Alaska. My record up there was 84-6. And after some stuff in life, I just decided to give the whole professional boxing thing a try. And went to Vegas and was training at top rank, you know, in the gym with some of the Mayweathers and you know, got to spar with some great guys in preparation for my debut. And it's kind of been just a crazy roller coaster ride ever since.
Cool. I just watched the show over the weekend. They're showing all kinds of different fighting all across the world. And one of the segments was a boxing tent show they had down in Australia, and these guys, you know, they had real ringer boxers fighting people right out of the crowd.
Yeah, it's
your experience.
Did my first share of that. That's for sure. Yeah, that's actually how I learned boxing.
Yeah, I can remember when I was just finishing out college and you know, trying to get back into boxing for the first time, and taking some time off, and I went into a gym and they would throw me right in with all the street fighters all the time. And I used to hate that because these guys, they don't know how to box, you know, and you can't get any rhythm against them.
I tell guys a lot of times, they think I'm crazy, you know. A lot of time a guy with you know, no fights, you know, could be a little bit different and a little more difficult than a guy with, you know, who's had a few fights. There's a little more structure to that guy and that sort of thing. But I get it.
One thing that usually, you know, you always get the edge on is if you have some boxing experiences, you have the stamina over a guy like that. Because what always used to happen to me is as soon as the guy would get tired, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to wade in and go after him. The coach would be like, stop.
Yeah.
That sucks. Anyway.
One thing I noticed along the same lines is, you know, getting in there with a lot of guys that were inexperienced or street fighters or just, you know, they're unorthodox. You know, you get in there with a conventional boxer, you kind of know you're going to see the jab, you're going to see what they're going to try to lead into, and you're going to have a camera. You get in there with a lot of these guys, and granted, you're right, they don't have the stamina most of the time, but they're coming out, and things are coming from every other angle. And it can get, a little difficult there for a while. I've been in there. One of the guys I remember more than anybody was, he was a kid in a program in Williamsport, PA, which they had a lot of drug rehab programs and tried to get these kids off the street programs. And they would bring them to Lock Haven. And I remember once he was a big, strong, husky kid. He was about 18, 19 years old. And he had knocked out a kid on the college team a week or two prior. He fought him with a right hand and waited the kid out cold. And then the following week, they were putting me in there. And I was a returning All-American, and I kind of knew what I was doing. I remember the coach pulling me aside saying, do what you got to do out there. Just watch his right hand. I told the coach, I said, hey, I ain't so-and-so. You know, he catches me, but I ain't going to crumble like that. But I went out there, and the first thing I do is I got in the kid's head. You know, he looked like a white version of Mike Tyson, you know. He had, like, that look, he had a gap in his teeth, you know, he had just a mean, nasty, cold black eyes, and he came up there, and the first thing I did was I started taking it to him into the body. And then I would wait for that big right hand to come, and I would just kind of step over the side and pivot. He'd miss, and he'd slam his gloves together, and he'd start pounding his chest, and he'd wave me on. I said, oh, you want me on? Okay, here I come. Then I'd come in, I'd be into the body some more. I'd wait for that big shot. He'd throw it. I would counter it. And I roughed him up pretty good. Then the following year, I was officiating, and I was refereeing one of his exhibitions, and he fought like a goddamn gorilla. I mean, it was punching and mauling and holding. And I remember I kept breaking him, and he would try to hit on the break. I've never, as a referee, and this is more of like an exhibition, I didn't count or anything. I've never gripped somebody up in the ring as a referee until that day.
Really? Wow.
Goddamn it. I'm trying to help you. When I tell you to break, break.
Right.
It's not rocket science.
Right on, yeah.
One thing I was saying, and I apologize for the technical difficulty we had. I was talking about the gentleman that you were going to fight, Harrison. And I said, this gentleman, he's fitting in a rematch. He beat him in the last fight, wiped him out all 8 rounds. I didn't see the fight. I don't know if they were competitive 8 rounds or whatever, but he won the fight on all the cards. The guy hasn't won a fight in 6 years. Why is there a rematch? I can't understand that. I mean, if I was, you know, unless Emmanuel Stewart saw something he didn't like. If I'm the guy's manager, and I give Emmanuel Stewart a lot of credit. He's, you know, been doing this at a genius level for decades now.
Absolutely.
So there must be something he didn't like. Because you would want to take the next step up. You got a prospect that's 9-0. Take the next step up. Take a guy that's, you know, hey, he's on a 4 or 5 fight win streak. He's looking good. He's fought some good quality fighters out there.
So, I
feel your pain in that one, Abel.
That's kind of what we were just kind of hoping for, you know what I mean? It's a thing of he backed out of the fight. I can speculate, you know, as to what the reasons for him backing out are, but that's what it would be speculation. But the fact of the matter is he's a tall, around 6'2", 6'1", 6'2". He's a big junior middleweight. He's a tall junior middleweight. Real athletic kid. Good skills. Keeps his, good concept of his range, all that kind of stuff. I mean, Emmanuel Stewart's training. He's kind of that typical conk style and body. I think that his KO percentage was, I think it was a little deceptive as to actually what kind of puncher he really is. You know, I'm sure that he's a good puncher. I don't think he's that type of puncher to be, 100%, 90-something percent knockout ratio. But I guess when it all comes down to it, they saw something in him in his last performance that made them kind of pump their brakes on what they had lined up. You know, we didn't go to Emmanuel Stewart and talk about this kid and say, your kid's trash, we want to fight him, all that. We didn't pick a fight. We were contacted about a fight. We were all for it. I'm getting great training, great sparring, actually. The guy, I'm actually in North Carolina right now, and the guy that I'm sparring with, he's a North Carolina fighter. He's an undefeated guy named Lamar Russ. He's a middleweight. I think he's 10-0 now. And it's funny, I'm sparring with Lamar Russ, and Lamar Russ is actually same dimension, same style as this kid I was going to fight, only he's better at this style than this kid is. So it was just a perfect situation. I was in shape, coming out of camp not too long ago with Gennady Golovkin, Carlson Jones, sparring just great guys up at the Summit in Big Bear, California, and then coming down, keeping my body in shape, sparring with Lamar Russ, another really, really, really talented undefeated fighter. And this kid drops out at the last minute, and this is number 6 for us. Frustration is high, but I'm determined to to keep grinding and not to lose focus, man. The second I lose focus and the second that I get complacent in this whole thing, you know, I might as well hang the gloves up. And I'm determined not to let that happen.
The article Rich sent me earlier, they were talking about a fight that fell through with Antonio Margarito when he announced his retirement. And as I was talking to Rich, you know, before when we first got on the air tonight, and obviously long before we got you on, I said, you know, as a fighter, as a fight fan, and you know, being involved in the fight game for as long as I have, I could see where that would be a major point of frustration because that is a good name, and he's, you know, yes, he is on the downside of his career, but the fact of the matter is he's still fighting at a championship level just a few years ago. He's got a good name out there, and it would represent a very nice payday. And boxing is a sport. It's not like a baseball where a relief pitcher that doesn't come in still gets paid. It's not like football where the backup quarterback sits on the sideline with a clipboard and still gets paid. If you're not competing, if you're not fighting, you're not getting paid. And I can see where that would be a very, you know, discouraging, you know, event.
Yeah, it's the fight with Margarito was just it was really something that I had prayed for. You know what I mean? It's like I've seen myself mature, you know, more in these last, you know, year and a half, 2 years as a fighter. Because I didn't even start boxing until I was 21 years old. And I had the IND fight after I was 21. You know, I started really late. And so I'm just kind of, I just started coming into, you know, really understanding who I am and what I'm capable of and what my strengths and weaknesses really are as a fighter. And the Margarito fight was something that was just, it was supposed to be a coming out party on national television to really show people that, you know, I'm able to compete at, you know, the next level. You know, granted, Margarito was clearly past his prime, but he was still, you know, scandal in the hand wraps or no scandal in the hand wraps. He's still one of the, you know, all-time best pressure fighters, at least of this era. You know, at least of my era in boxing. So, to be able to stand up and box clean and match up with, you know, dominate him in skill set, that's something I was looking forward to. Like you said, it was the best payday that I would have had to date in my career. And then when that one sold out, it just, man, it broke my heart to pieces. And, you know, there were other things that came up and, you know, it, one thing after another just fell out. And I just, I'm a faith-based person and I work hard and, you know, I guess I just have to believe that, you know, something else is coming. You know, whatever it is, take advantage of that opportunity and do everything that I can to benefit from that opportunity. And I just have to believe that the next opportunity is coming. That's all I can do.
Okay, is there anybody out there right now that you really want to fight next that you would sign right now?
I mean, I'm not a guy, you know, I don't have any problems with, you know, any of these guys. You know, even after Tony Harrison pulled out of the fight, you know, he's starting this whole thing on Twitter and, you know what I mean, saying, I mean, I would have knocked you out anyway. And, I mean, it's like it's cool to talk trash after you pull out of a fight, but I don't really get that. You know, so nothing for me in this business is personal. You know, I can't afford for it to be personal. You know, I mean, I'm to a place where I'm progressing as a fighter, I'm progressing as a professional, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to do my job and I'm going to knock people out and I'm going to put hands on people, not because I hate them, not because it's anything personal, but because it's my job and I'm good at my job and I'm getting better at my job every day. So I don't really have anyone specifically that I want to call out. But I'm a fighter who wants real fights and wants to make real fights. I prepare accordingly, and I'm ready to perform. That's just where I am.
Okay, how about role models out there in the sport? Anybody come out to mind, favorite fighters and all that?
Favorite fighters, I mean, skill set-wise, I mean, I believe Floyd Mayweather's skill set-wise, as far as just pure boxing ability, the science of the sport, He's probably the guy. As a role model, you know, I'm a Christian guy, and you know, a lot of people say Evander Holyfield, and Evander Holyfield's a great guy and all that kind of stuff. But as a role model, as someone who just kind of was someone that I always kind of liked how they handled themselves, how they handled victory, how they handled defeat, was Chris Berg. Chris Berg is always someone that I enjoyed. You know, I could never see myself kind of fighting with that style. But I guess kind of what I am now, I'm kind of a boxer, puncher, that has a big heart and faith in God. And I'm trying to be somewhere between Floyd Mayweather and Chris Berg, I guess.
That's an interesting answer. And what would you say is the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing I do to get ready for a fight, it would have to be, you know, again, this is me and this is what makes me different. My faith is a big part of everything. You know, I'm never out of shape. I live in the gym. I'm a junkie. I'm one of those guys that, you know, trainers have to tell me to take an extra day off so I don't eat too much. I do the work. I train. But my faith is kind of where I find peace. You know, and I talk about being a Christian and all that, and that doesn't mean I'm not one of these guys that goes out and, you know, shakes fingers at people. You know, I'm a Christian not because I have everything together. I'm a Christian because I don't have everything together. And that's kind of where I find peace. And I think peace outside of the ring, for me anyway, translates to peace in the ring, especially with the style that I fight with, having a clear mind, you know, being able to think and react, and being intelligent, being able to, you know, kind of relax my mind and have peace is something that's important to that. So aside of all the normal things, the training, the sparring, and, you know, I've mentioned Lamar Russ. I have awesome sparring right now. A kid's going to be an animal, you know, over these next few years. But the things that I do outside of the ring are just as much of a part, you know, if not more, than my preparation in the gym.
And what do you enjoy most about boxing itself?
The conflict. I mean, it seems like the purest conflict on the planet. I mean, you have this guy looking at me, telling me he's going to knock me out, and I'm looking at him, telling him I'm going to knock him out. The simple fact is that one of us is mistaken or lying or something, and, you know, by the end of the night, we're going to know who was mistaken. You know, it doesn't have to be a thing where I hate him, he hates me, but we're going to go in there and we're going to do our jobs, and we're going to find out who the better person was, even just if just for that night. And that's conflict. It's pure conflict. And, you know, I tell people all the time, I don't believe that boxing builds character in anyone. I believe that boxing reveals character in people. And boxing saves my life in so many ways. And it's taught me a lot about myself. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I always say, you know, when I was younger, late teens, I was getting rambunctious, and I love to say this to people, especially when I talk to people now. I was rambunctious, and I wanted to prove myself to somebody, and I didn't know how. I wasn't the best player on the football team in high school. I wasn't the smartest kid. I wasn't in all the clubs. The only way I knew how to do it was with my hands. But I was taking it more to the street, which was a bad thing, and, you know, now realizing how stupid that was. But then I started boxing. I started building confidence in myself and, you know, went up to college, competed there for a while. I almost fought Rich in the Nationals my senior year. And a few weeks after that, our coach, who was very well-known in college boxing, he took us to a local – it was a small prison. It was a small little, you know, guys that were just spent like almost like a federal prison. And the reason we went there was because one of our former fighters was doing an internship there. So we were in there just kind of doing demonstrations and talking to some of the guys. And these are young guys, you know, that, you know, they were going to get out and they were going to, you know, have a chance to make a positive influence on, you know, on society. And
right.
I remember the Dr. Cox was telling these guys, he goes, I brought two fighters with you today. He brought three of us total, but he goes, the two guys I purposely brought were two guys that are polar opposites. The one kid, you know, he was a kid that, you know, he was all A's in school. He was a resident assistant. He was like the goody-goody two-shoes kid, you know, the church on Sunday, and, you know, always living a clean and model life. I was a kid that had still come up from a little rougher of an upbringing, and even though I still had a great family structure, I still was a little bit more rambunctious. And he goes, this is a guy right here that if he didn't come to me, he might be sitting with you. And I think that resonated with a lot of those guys. And if we helped one of those kids make a positive influence, I mean, you know, I was happy to be an example. I mean, I turned what could have been a negative in my life into a positive. Just like you, I was a gym rat once I started boxing. There were nights I would be down in Philadelphia, and I would be the last one to leave. Even after my workout was done, I just wanted to sit there and watch the other guys work out and learn how to train fighters. I wanted to say, hey, I'm 5'8", and I was 195 pounds at the time. I'm a short, stocky guy. I'm going to fight in a Martian, Frazier, Tyson style. You know, that's the only way I could. But I wanted to sit there and say, how do you train a guy that's Tommy Hearns' style, 6'2 and 147 pounds. We're going to be different. I wanted to learn just the strategies and implementing strategies and techniques. That's why I train guys now, and I love every moment of it.
Awesome. It's good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, who is the toughest guy you've ever fought so far, amateur or professional?
The toughest guy that I've ever fought. Not the best fight that I've ever fought, but my toughest fight was probably a guy named Patrick Thompson. He wasn't, I was in total control of the fight. He was a journeyman type of a fighter. But he was a naturally bigger guy than me. And he was crafty, and he was just a solid dude. You know, I touched him with shots, clean shots. I mean, cut him open, and, I mean, blood everywhere, that type of thing. Just was in control of the fight the whole time. But he was a real awkward style, kind of like an octopus, real unorthodox. And it was a tedious kind of tough fight in that regard. All of my other losses, were really not tough matches. You know, I mean, early on in my career, you know, I had three losses in a row. The first one of those to James De La Rosa was the type of thing where I hadn't been in the gym for, you know, a couple months, and I got a call to fight James De La Rosa, and the money was good. I was undefeated. Kind of a young, naive kid, and I spent, I was fighting at a weight that I really should have been at. I shouldn't have been at 47. It was too small. And I was walking around, you know, on the upside of 170, and I cut from 174 to 146.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nuts.
It was murder. I cut from 173, 74 to 146 in 2 weeks, and you know, early on in the fight, the first round, I looked great. And the first time he touched me, I just didn't have a chin, you know, kind of not much weight. And, you know, when people Google me, that's the fight they'll see on YouTube and all that. And I'm okay with that, you know. I mean, if that's people's perception of me, I'm not a rock star. I'm not a famous guy. So people, you know, if I have a lot of fights out of there online where I'm looking like I look now, I'll never get a fight. You know, I'm having a hard time getting a fight with that being what's out there. The next fight that I lost, if I'm not mistaken, was Joseph Gomez. He, at the time, I think he had one loss, and I fought him, you know, within spitting distance of his backyard. It was essentially a hometown fight. And it's one of those things where I honestly, you know, to this day, I feel like I won the fight. I feel like I went in, and I mean, I busted the guy up. I chopped him. He was cut over both eyes, and you know what I mean? It was that type of thing. But I didn't get a decision. Can't complain about that. The next one was a Donald Camarena fight. I thought I won every second of every round against Donald Camarena. I dropped him in the first round. The referee in Colorado in his hometown called it a slip and actually helped him up off the ground after I hit him with the right hand. It was that type of thing. So a lot of my losses are deceptive. I fought Jonathan Gonzalez, and that fight was stopped. I mean, I was winning every second fight until the last round, and it was another one of those things where the fight was supposed to be at 47. I made 47. He told me that they needed to make the weight 49. So I said, okay, they gave me some money. I weighed in at 49. And he weighed in at 64 and a half still. So the fight wasn't going to happen. He was a big kid and won every second of every round and just got touched with a great shot. And that was that. And, you know, another one was my last loss was against Grady Brewer, who's just one of those old, spoiler, kind of wily, veteran kind of guys. I thought the fight, it was the most boring, you know, inactive fight that, you know, I've ever been a part of. And I fought him in his backyard. I honestly felt like I won the fight, but it's another one of those things I knew I was going to have to go into that fight and really beat the brakes off of him in his backyard. It was a real inactive fight. I think I got hit with one clean shot through, you know, the whole fight. But in his backyard, I didn't do enough to get a win against the awkward style. So I haven't had a lot of guys that, you know, have dominated me or that sort of thing. My toughest fights have come in victory. And, that's pretty much the story of my record to date.
Well, that's good. That's a pretty good picture of what you've been through there. Now, do you have a favorite punch at all?
My jab is what I live and die by. You know, I'm 5'11". You know, some people, you know, I kind of stretch the truth every once in a while and say I'm 6 foot, but I'm 5'11". I've been telling that lie since I was a basketball player trying to play. I wish I was 6 foot, but the thing that people don't understand, even against this kid, Tony Harrison, he's a fighter who likes to sit and fight on the outside, but I'm 5'11", but I have a 78-inch reach. I have long arms and a wicked, stiff, fast jab. You know, I can stand straight up and scratch my knees. I have long arms. And my jab is what I live and die by. I've got good power in both hands. You know, probably not going to kill you with one shot, but if I touch you with two or three, your day's probably going to change. But my jab is what I live and die by. I'm a aggressive boxer puncher with the wicked jab.
That was always my favorite punch, and it paid off because my one victory at Nationals that got me into the semifinals, there was a point after the fight where the judge actually came up to me and he goes, you know, your jab won you that fight. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Cool. Kind of knew that, but thanks for confirming it.
Right on. Nice.
I used to go to parties and fight guys with one hand. You know, I'd bring my boxing gloves. I'd say, I'll just use the left glove.
Yeah, did a little bit of that too. You know, that whole boxing circuit in Alaska. You know, it was something right out of a movie. You know, like everyone. I mean, the whole circuit actually reminded me. I mean, I've never seen that movie Gladiator with Cuba Gooding Jr. It's an old movie.
Yeah.
doing the underground boxing.
Yeah. I
read the main actor was the guy from Rambo, and I can't remember his name. Brian Dennehy.
Yeah, exactly. It was the circuit was a lot like that, only it looked like a pro show, like the setting, the ring. It was at the downtown convention center every Thursday night. No weight classes. I mean, like I fought a pro who was a former world champion at cruiserweight, and I was walking around at 160 pounds. A guy named Mike Cedillo, Mexican cruiserweight. I want to say he was an IBF champion.
I remember him.
Yeah, I fought him in Alaska and beat him in Alaska at the end of his career.
I'm gonna look him up right now. If I remember correctly, yeah. I remember him fighting Anthony Hendricks. Let me confirm that.
He was older when I fought him.
Which makes fun of me because I remember too many boxing stats.
Say again, I'm sorry?
Rich always fucks me because I remember. Yep, Mike Cedillo right here. Rich makes fun of me because I know too many boxing stats. Yep, from birthplace of Mexico.
Yeah, that's it.
There he is right here. Yeah, I remember watching him fight on USA Tuesday Night Fight.
Uh-huh. Long time ago. He was from that area. Yeah. Absolutely. He came up to Alaska, kind of towards the end, and made a little bit of money doing that. But, he was one of those pros that came through at the end of his career, and I got to fight him. And, you know, I've had some experience, you know. My amateur career was kind of like an ugly pro career. It wasn't the pretty boy USA boxing stuff. It was kind of rugged, physical fights with no headgear. You know, it was pro style scoring. It was pro style boxing.
Well, we're running out of time, Abel. I hate to cut you off, but
okay.
The show this segment's about to end here. But definitely enjoyed talking to you, and we'll keep an eye on you. And keep everybody on the site updated about what you're up to next. So definitely appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you for being on.
Good luck, Abel.
All right, folks, that's it for us.
All right, till next week.
Till next week.
All right, guys, let's enjoy the fights, as always.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Tom. Tony.